Morning. Today's daf in Bechoros is Mem Vav. We're in the Mishnah Mem Hey Amud Beis. We're starting the first Mishnah on the Amud, finishing up the seventh parak of the Masechta, and God willing, in a little couple minutes from now, we're going to be starting the eighth parak. The seventh parak deals with the mumim of a kohen. The sixth parak taught us about the mumim of an animal. An animal subject to various blemishes that would disqualify it to be brought as a carbon, or if it's a really significant mum, so it allows somebody to shecht it and eat it if it were in fact a bechor. So those are the mumim of the sixth parak. And then in addition to all those mumim, there's also mumay adam, the blemishes that affect a kohen. A kohen has physical blemishes, so then he cannot do the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. What are the physical blemishes? So we broke it down in the beginning of the Masechta, the beginning of the parak, into three different categories. Category number one is the mumim makasav shebetorah, the blemishes that are written in the Torah. The Torah in Parshas Emor goes through 9, 10, depending on how you count it. Well, let's call it 10. 10 different blemishes that would disqualify a kohen from doing the avodah. If a kohen had any of those, so then a kohen would be disqualified. And not only that, but if he in fact did the avodah, Mechalas Avodah, he would disqualify the Avodah as well. The Avodah that he does with those blemishes would just simply all be negated. The second category of blemishes are Einu Shava Shel Zbizara Shel Aaron. It just simply does not replicate what Aaron would look like. Right? We have a basic idea of what Aaron looks like. When I say we have an idea, we don't have a picture. But we have a general sense of what Aaron looks like, or if you want to say it a little differently, we have a general sense of what people look like. And so therefore, a blemish would be something that does not conform to a general look of what a person looks like. So this is the second category of blemishes, and that's really what our Mishnah is focused on. Those are all the various disqualifications that we went through in this parak. And then the third category is a funny category. It has a funny name to it. It's called Maris Ayin. It's a funny name because that's not the general usage of Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin generally means that it's you can't do it because it looks bad. Here, it's a bad look. Right, a couple of examples that are given from Maris Ayin that we saw in our Mishnah. You don't have your teeth, right? So you don't have your teeth, so it's not any of the mum mentioned in the Torah. You look like the son of Aaron, but you're there in the Beis HaMikdash and you smile and everyone sees you're toothless, and it's a bad look. So, okay, that's just same shot in the Mishnah. That's really what it is. So it's a bad look. So those are the three categories. Most of the time we focus on the second category. We do work a little bit on the first category because even though the Torah is actually pretty clear, in other words, it's written in the Torah, but sometimes the Torah gives us something and quite frankly, we don't even know what it is. Right? Muruch Ashach, right? Yesterday's daf, or 2 days ago. Muruch Ashach, what does that even mean? So the Tanaim argue about that. Okay, so we spent time in this parak going over all three different categories and all the various psulim of a kohen. We are now up to color complexion. Okay, what color should a kohen be? So obviously there are various tones of people. You can see I myself coming from Polish descent. So I trend more towards the lighter side. But okay, so what should be the preferred color? So that is our Mishnah. So the Mishnah says Akushi Anichov Alav. Huh? Okay, so Akushi Anicho Valavkan, the Akapech Vananas Vacher Vashotev Ashikar Vale Negaim Tarim Psulim, Vaad Mukshem Behema. So the Mishnah gives us now various things which would be a psul by Adam. And that would be, first we're going to go over three different colors. Kushi Nicho Valavkan. Now I'm going to give away what the Gemara is going to tell us. Kushi is extraordinarily dark, Gichor is red, and Lavkan is white. So these are three different complexions which are not going to be good for a kohen. Obviously, everything is relative over here, but we'll see more of it as we go through the Gemara. The kapeach, somebody who is extraordinarily tall. What's wrong with being tall? The Gemara is going to ask that question. Nanas, another direction. Somebody's extraordinarily short. Cheresh shote, right? The cheresh, somebody who's a deaf mute, and shote, somebody who is mentally incompetent, mentally deranged. Shikor, kohen who's drunk. Bali Nagaim Tahorim. Okay, so he has Saras, but not Saras that would be Metamehim. There's nothing to talk about. He can't even walk into the Mikdash. We're talking about somebody who has Saras, but Saras Tahor, but it's an eyesore. He has Saras. He has some sort of skin condition. So in all these cases, Psulim Vadim Kshem Behema. So they would all be absorbed when it comes to people, but it would be kosher by animals. Now, mind you, by the way, that as we opened up the seventh perek, so we noted that anything which is mum by behema is going to be mum by an adam. Okay, so that's generally true. And this Mishnah obviously is articulating the exceptions. These obviously are exceptions to that general rule. These things, it doesn't matter what complexion the animal is. It's a lighter animal, it's a darker animal, obviously it doesn't matter. But when it comes to a Kohen, so then the color of the complexion is going to matter vis-a-vis his ability to work in the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Shimon Gamal Amar showed
him. They have a second category, so they have couldn't apply to the Hema.
That's true. That part's also true. Rav Shimon Gamal Amar showed him. Mina Behema Ina Mina Mubchar. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that a shota, as far as an animal is concerned, is eino min hamufchar. So not the choicest. Okay, so generally speaking, we don't do much intelligence tests as it relates to animals, but still, we're talking about a deranged animal, an animal that's clearly deranged. And Rabbi Lazar Omer af balei hadodalam psulim ba'adam k'shirim bebehema. If you have, let's say, little pieces of skin that are starting to come off, so by a kohen it's unseemly, and therefore not going to be good, but by an animal, it doesn't matter if some skin is coming off. Okay, so with that in, with the mission now behind us, so just some definitions of the terms. First of all, there's three colors of the Mishnah. The Gemara struggles a little bit with identifying the color. So Kushi Uchma. So as far as Kushi is concerned, so is black. That, the Gemara says, we know. And as far as Gichor Chivra, so the Gemara now is suggesting that Gichor is white, and Lafkan is Sumka, and Lafkan is red. So the Gemara right there and then says, I don't think that's right. Ini. So we were in the market and we heard somebody screaming out, anyone have Lukani? Vishtake Chivra. Now, and it turns out that what he's selling is some sort of white, whatever it was, a white animal, a white bird, whatever the case was, Lukani he clearly was using in the context of white. So Elakushi Uchma, so the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to recalibrate and redefine. Kushi is black, Ichor Simka is red, and Kedami Ishi Simka Gichi. And there is an expression that supports that. People would say Simka Gichi. Okay, it's an expression. And so Simka is red, and Lavkan Chivra, Kauda Amaluhu Man by Lukani Vishtake Chivra. Okay, so we have now a great support for our definitions, which is what I gave away back in the Mishnah, when we saw the Mishnah. Kipech. Tenibra Zvid Gavoa. So Kipech is somebody who's extraordinarily tall. Great. So somebody's extraordinarily tall. So the Gemara says, "Ini v'atini Rabbi Abba minan shekarsh baruchu mishtabech b'balei kama." Now, Karsh Baruch Hu has a certain affinity to tall people, and yes, it hurts me to say that. But Karsh Baruch Hu has a certain affinity towards tall people. How do I know that? Shenemar v'anochi shmaniti es amari mibneihem asher kegova arazim. So gavo. So there are tall cedars. Karsh Baruch Hu clearly favors tall people. Yeah, he likes tall people. So amar apapa ba'aricha shemita sanya. So the Gemara says, yeah, Akash Baruch likes tall, but he doesn't like lanky. So if you are, okay, now I'm going to spare you from mentioning particular NBA players. But in other words, who accept it, so you'll get a pass today. Well, but in other words, if you have somebody who is particularly tall, but at the same time also particularly thin, so he's lanky, so that's a mum. Amar Shlakish, Gavolo Yisa Gavois. Gemara gives us, let's call them suggestions. Right, I don't use that word normally when
guidance.
Right, guidance. when we're going through halachas and going through the mitzvahs of the Torah, but I don't think Reish Lakish over here means this as an absolute. But anyway, gavo lo yisa gavois. If you're tall man, don't marry a tall woman. Shem yetsa mehen torin, because you're going to end up with some form of a mountain, meaning someone who is unusually tall. And nana slo isa nanesa, say short man should marry a short woman. Shema yetsa mehem etzbai, and someone extraordinarily short is going to come out of that marriage. And lavan lo yisa lavana, if you are unusually pale, don't marry somebody else who's unusually pale, because then you're going to end up with someone who is really pale. Shema yetsa mehem bohak. And shachar lo yisa shchara, shema yetsa mehem tapoach. And somebody who is black shouldn't marry somebody who is black, because you're going to end up with someone who is unusually darker. Hacher shotav ashikor shikor machil avoda v'hademome demechila avoda by lemechshev. So the Gemara says, now we're talking about a shikor in our Mishnah. Somebody who's drunk is going to do the avoda. The avoda is no good. Meaning, so that is somebody who fits into category number one. Put him back earlier in this parak. What are you discussing him at the end of the parak over here? Where these are people who shouldn't be doing the avoda, but if they do the avoda, it would be fine, right? You have somebody with a with an unusual complexion, like we just discussed. So if they did the avoda would be fine. Meaning they shouldn't do the avoda, but it'd be fine. And then you're throwing a shikar into the discussion. Somebody who's drunk, you're drunk and you do the avoda. The avoda is chulin. It's simply no good. So this is the Gemara's answer. Bishar dvarim hamashkirim deloka Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara's answer is we're talking about where you got intoxicated, but not through wine. Now there is a debate on this issue, and some are of the opinion that it doesn't matter what intoxicates you. You are a Kohen who cannot do the avoda, and the avoda would be chulin. But some are of the opinion that we're going to make a distinction between wine and other intoxicants. Wine is for sure a posel regarding a Kohen, and the avoda would be chulin. Other intoxicants, Kohen should not step in and do the avoda, right? Servicing under the influence, so he shouldn't do it. But there are some of the opinion. There are some of the opinion that if done with other intoxicants, the avoda is good. Udaloka Rabbi Yehuda. Now, who stands on the first side of this argument? That's Rabbi Yehuda. So if we're going to defend our Mishnah, we have to say that it's other intoxicants, and we don't subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda. How do I know that? D'tanya, achol devei lakilos v'shasa chalav o devash nichnas l'mikdash chayev. So Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that vis-a-vis walking into the base of Mikdash inebriated, it doesn't matter what the intoxicant is. If you have other intoxicants, now he describes as other intoxicants various fruits and milk and honey. And in our day and age, we don't know them to be intoxicants. Interesting Rashi over here. Rashi describes when describing honey. So Rashi actually refers to the popular drink in the day, mead. Okay, it's not popular nowadays, but it's out there. So certainly something fermented and intoxicating. Anyway, point being that you could say that our Mishnah is going where the Kohen is intoxicated by other intoxicants, but then you have to say that our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. We're now going to go in the other direction. We're going to talk about those things that disqualify an animal, but not a Kohen. So Osav Espino. Osav Espino would be a disqualification regarding an animal, but not by a Kohen. Now it's funny. By a Kohen, right. You're not sacrificing the Kohen. There's no Isser of Osav Espino. The problem actually gets more than that, and when we get to the Gemara is going to cover the Osav Espino. Let's leave it alone right now. Trefa. If an animal's a trefa, so not a good carbon. Why is a trefa not a good carbon? So the Mishnah nor the Gemara actually says. Rashi doesn't say. You can give very simple svaras. One svar you can give is that you're not allowed to eat a trefa. So we know that when it comes to eligibility of a carbon on the base of Mikdash, it only those things which are kosher. Only those things you and I can eat, mimashke yisrael. Obviously, trefa you're not allowed to eat. That could be a simple svar in terms of why trefa is no good as a carbon. If a kohen is a trefa, so that means that our kohen now is in a terminal state. Right? One of his organs is punctured or pierced, and he's in a terminal state, but he could do the avoda. Okay. Yotzei dofen, coming out via cesarean. So the kohen who comes out via cesarean, oh, fine, no problem at all. He could do the avoda. An animal comes out via cesarean, no good, disqualified. We have in the parentheses, shenevda behem navera, v'shehemis es ha'ada. Okay, lengthy discussion. I'll just translate the words of the Mishnah, and we'll bypass it, but I'll translate the words. Shenevda behem navera is where they were involved in a sexually illicit relation. When it comes to an animal, so let's say the animal was sodomized by a human, or the second case, is shehemis es ha'ada. So they killed a man. So if an animal kills a man, so an animal would be disqualified. If a Kohen kills a man, so we can conjure up a number of different circumstances where it would be okay. Self-defense, shogeg, maybe. That's where the discussion gets a little bit tricky. Okay, anyway. Hanose inoshim ba'avera. Paso ashidirenu anah. Now, obviously marriage is a non-starter discussion when it comes to animals, so there's simply nothing to talk about. But what about a Kohen? A Kohen is married to somebody he shouldn't be married to. Okay, so he's married to a grusha, or Rashi also adds chalutza, so which is an issur de rabbanan. But Cohen's married to a grusha; he's married to a divorcee, and now he comes into the base of mikdash like to do the avoda. So the other kohanim say to him, "No, you're currently married to a divorcee; you can't." So you would think, as would I have before the Mishnah. Okay, so what would be the remedy? The remedy would be he'd have to divorce his divorcee. In other words, okay, once he's no longer married to somebody prohibited, so then that would resolve the issue. Interesting, we don't even have to get to that point. Yadirenu hana. So what he needs to do is just simply make a neder that he's not going to get any benefit from his wife. Obviously, that will result in divorce. But at that juncture, at that point in time now, he can already start doing the avoda. Now, let's say I have a Kohen, and I'll just simply call him unusual. I don't want to be judgmental, but I'll call him unusual. He loves going to the cemetery. He loves it. And he shouldn't, meaning he's a Kohen. He's not allowed to be Metame Lameis. But he can't help himself. He loves going there. So he comes to the Beis HaMikdash, and you know, we keep saying to him, you know, you got to stop going to the cemetery. It's a strange conversation. So as long as he simply commits, he comes forward, obviously he needs a tahara, obviously. He can't go into the Beis HaMikdash instead of Tumas Meis. But he comes forward and he says, you know what? I swear I'm not going to go to take out the word swear.
I promise.
Right, I promise. I'm not going back there again, right? That's it. I'm good. I'm done. I'm totally reformed. So under those circumstances, we can accept him back. Okay. We're describing now in the first example of the Mishnah, Osav Espino. Applies to animals, don't apply to Kohanim. Don't apply to Kohanim. What would apply to Kohanim? Like, what are we even talking about? Elam Aaron of Anav de Kavasei, Taisha Beno. So the Gemara says, okay, Aaron and his sons can do the Avoda together, which is true, which, of course. And Osav Espino, and when it comes to animals, a male father, that was redundant, a father animal, and its offspring cannot be shechted on the same day. Is that even true?
No.
Meaning the Isser of Osav Espino is regarding a mother and its offspring. Now, there is an opinion that says a father and its offspring as well, but that's not generally regarded as the accepted position. So you can't even come up with a comparable case of the Kohanim, father-son, and animal, father-son. So, like, what are we even talking about? So the Gemara has exactly this discussion. Osav Espino only applies to females, not to males, like I just described. So Gemara says, okay, so fine. So by animals, mother and its offspring cannot be offered on the same day. All right, now let's move that over to Kohanim. So So that means the Kohen and his mother can't do the avoda on the same day? His mother can't do the avoda. Only the male Kohanim do the avoda, not the female. So la'olam Aaron of Anav, who dekavasei hacha taisha b'no. So the Gemara says, well, here's what we have to say. We're talking about a father-son Kohen. We're talking about a father-son and pair of animals, set of animals. So Amri b'ma'arav mishmei de Rabbi Yosi b'arav v'na'ada amra chanan yehi. And we're back is against the wall. And we're going to have to say that our Mishnah subscribes to the opinion of Chananya. Chananya that we saw all the way back in Chulin, who says that Osav Espino applies to the fathers as well as the mothers in animals. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa, Osav Espino, Noeg b'nekevos ve'no noeg b'zacharim, Chananya omer, noeg b'zacharim uv'nekevos. Fine. So that's how we're going to have to say our Mishnah. Next section.
So then the Mishnah is approving Chananya for Nechulin?
Yes. But approving meaning subscribing to the position. That doesn't mean that we're going to follow that lahalacha. But yes, it's unusual that a Stam Mishnah is going to be going like Chananya.
Saying it as a Mishnah is a lacha then, no?
Not necessarily. Yeah, you have to take everything into consideration. The Mishnah is in Chulin, the Gemara in Chulin. It's not by itself. It's not just.
The fact that it's repeated.
Let's table the discussion, but it's something. It is a consideration, but not the only consideration.
The halacha is like this Mishnah.
Okay.
It's not like Chananya though, but other
parts. Right. Correct. Hanosei Noshim, Tana, the Gemara quotes a brisa, Noder ve'oved yored umegaresh. So, a Kohen comes in married to a Grusha. And the brisa over here, very succinctly, but very powerfully describes how the Kohenim say to him, you know, you're married to a Grusha, you can't do the Avoda. Okay, so he makes a Neder. I'm not getting benefit from that woman anymore. Fine. So, Noder ve'oved. And immediately he could do the Avoda. Yored umegaresh. He'll finish doing the Avoda. And obviously, the neder is going to result in a divorce. The Gemara says, now wait one second. Now, the neder obviously is a way to incentivize him to divorce his wife. It's not the only thing that, it's not solid. What can you do with the neder? Go to Talmud Chacham. Release yourself from the neder. The Gemara asks exactly that question. So why aren't we worried about him going to a Chacham? Because of it's a neder. So the Gemara says, well, we're subscribing to the viewpoint that you have to explicate to the Chacham why exactly you made the neder. It's always difficult for me to understand personally the other side of this argument. Meaning, you go to a Chacham, you told him you make a neder, I'd like a release. Okay, fine.
What?
In other words, and the Chacham doesn't know any information, it's difficult. It's just difficult for me to understand the other side of it. But this side of the position is, Sarich Lafar, it's a neder, you have to explain why you're doing it. And once the Chacham hears, he made a neder because he was married to a Grusha, and then he wanted to do the Avodah, so he made a neder, so of course the Chacham is not going to release him from that neder. So, Hanich Lamanda Art Sarich Lafar, it's a neder, Lamanda Art Sarich Lafar, it's a neder, Michael Amemar. The Gemara says, okay. But on this issue, there are two valid opinions. What if I subscribe to the other position? The Madrina Le Barabim. So the Gemara says, well, he makes a neder in public. Hanich Laman Damer Neder Shehudar Barabim in Lafar. Laman Damer Yesh Lafar Michael Amemar. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's also up for debate. And there are those who have the opinion that if you make a neder even in public, you could still go to a Chacham to have him release him from you. So the Gemara says, Adas Rabim. So the Gemara says, well, he didn't just simply make it in public, but he made it on the contingency of public consent. I will only be released from my neder only if the public ever allows it. And get a group of people to agree on anything. Right. And the Gemara says that once you make a neder, and you do so, and with the ability to be released from it only when the public agrees, so then obviously that's a neder that you can never get out of. The Gemara says that's true, but if there was a mitzvah involved, so then we assume that everyone would agree. Everyone understands the value of a mitzvah. I'd like to think everyone understands the value of a mitzvah. But if there was a mitzvah involved, so then even if it's al das rabim, you can get out of it. So yesh lo hafar, I'm sorry, so aval advar mitzvah yesh lo hafar. Ki ahud de mikri dar dekei. We heard the story numerous times in Shas. We get to hear it again at the end of the sixth parak of Bechoros. So there was a mechanech, there was a certain malamid. So Adre Rav Acha de Kapasha Bianuka. So Rav Acha heard stories about this particular malamid, and they put him in cherem. And more than that, they made a neder that he wasn't going to be able to teach again. Pasha Bianuka. He was hitting the kids. Now I'll add, he was hitting the kids too much. You know, back in the day, that was standard practice. Right, speak to the elderly, and they'll tell you. Back in the day, they used to get hit. You don't have to speak to even the older generation, right? People got hit. So, nowadays it's not done, but back in the day it was done. And when I say back in the day, most of Jewish history, that was done. But this person was particularly abusive. And so they removed him. On the other hand, he was a really good mechanech. So the kapasha b'yinuk v'hadra ravina delo ishkach to have a daik kavasei. And so they did this by neder. And meanwhile, because they simply couldn't find a better mechanech, so I'd like to say also that they counseled him a little bit and mentored him a little bit. But whatever the case is, in other words, it's a mitzvah to teach Torah. They couldn't find anyone as good. So they were able to release him from the neder. Hametam la mesim, maishna hacha desagile bekabala, maishna hasam de madrina lay. Now, you have Kohanim in our Mishnah who are just simply off course. One is married to a grusha. Another loves going to the cemetery. And in the latter case, the Mishnah said, it's enough if he just simply makes a commitment. I won't do it again. In the case of the man married to the grusha, he's got to make a neder. What's the difference? We all know the answer. The Gemara just simply articulates it. So Maishna Hasam de Madrinalei Hasam Yitzur Tokfo. So the Gemara says, okay, because not going to the cemetery is not as challenging as divorcing your wife. You like your wife, but you have to divorce her, right? You're a Kohen, she's a Grusha, but obviously that's much more difficult. And so right, Yitzur Tokfo, your Yitzur Hara is going to get the best of you. And even with the firmest commitment, all right, I'm telling you, I'm going to divorce her, right? No more. But then you go home and, you know, she made you a nice dinner and, okay. Right, good. Okay. Hadron alach mumen elu.
According to this Mishnah, yeah. When it says regarding it and its offspring, like we said, the Chani said, father and...
Right.
So what case we have for Kohanim that they cannot be...
They do the Avodah together. So, meaning just like the animals are serving in the Beis HaMikdash by being shechted,
yes.
The Kohanim are serving in the Beis HaMikdash.
So what's the problem?
Exactly, it's fine.
So no, but it's not really... Why is it become to become fine? So, you know, what's the...
Right, it's not super comparable, admittedly. In other words, but the animals were shechting them, right, by the kohanim, the serving. But still, it's avoda. For the animal, avoda means it's being shechted. For people, avoda means they're doing the avoda. That's the connection. Okay, opening up now to the eighth parak, not opening, but on the eighth parak now of the Masechta, and here we begin. We talk about Bechor, we talk about the firstborn, and being the firstborn has its privileges, has its responsibilities, but it has its privileges as well. And we're going to be discussing it in terms of Pidgin HaBen and Nachla. Now, by Pidgin HaBen, so you have a firstborn, so you have to redeem him, your firstborn son. Okay, as we know, we discussed it already before, but now we're going to be discussing in much greater detail in this parak. Additionally, you have a firstborn son, so now he's going to get Pishnaim. So that means to say that the inheritance, the laws of inheritance demand that the firstborn son is going to be getting two times more than anyone else. Will that create any kind of contention in the family? The answer, of course, not. Sometimes it does. But the the Torah Kedosha outlines that the being a Bechor means that you're also going to be the you'll be head of household, head of the family, and so you're going to get Pishnaim, you're going to get two times more. Two times more meaning as follows. It's a very simple mathematical formulation. In other words, whatever the estate is, however many children they are, so every child is an X, firstborn is going to be 2X, and then just do the math, right? That's your algebra for the day. And you just do the math, and the firstborn is going to get 2X of what all the other brothers are going to be receiving. Fine? So that is the Bechor L'Nachla. Now, what is going to be a Bechor for Pidgin HaBen is not the same as what's going to be a Bechor L'Nachla, and that's all the Mishnah is here to tell us. That because they are two different, there are two different sources and two different reasons behind the Bechor L'Pidgin HaBen and the Bechor L'Nachla, so therefore there are going to be many circumstances where you have one and not the other. Sometimes you have both, sometimes you have neither. And that's what we're learning together in the Mishnah. Now, to outline it even before we start the Mishnah, it's very simple. When it comes to Bechor L'Nachla, so how does the Torah describe it when it comes to Bechor L'Nachla? So, V'hu Reishis Ono. This is your first issue, meaning issue meaning the father and his Zera. So that means to say that it's being a Bechor L'Nachla is a function of this is the father's firstborn. The father's first issue resulting in the father's firstborn, lo mishpat habechora. So that means to say now he's going to get pishnaim, he's going to get two times more in terms of the estate over the other brothers. When it comes to Pidgin HaBen, we've seen this already numerous times, we all know this. What is going to be the determinant of Pidgin HaBen? Peter Rechem. Firstborn that comes out of the mother, right? The one that breaks through the mother's womb. That is going to be the determinant of Pidgin HaBen. And so, we can already, even before we see the Mishnah, we can already come up with many circumstances where there's one and not the other. So let's say the father's already had children before with other women, and now he's marrying this woman for her first time, and she now has her firstborn. Okay, so now we could say it already. In other words, we can already write some of the Mishnah, which this is coming up in the Mishnah. So as far as Nachla is concerned, he's not a Bechor L'Nachla. It's not the father's firstborn. It's first Pidgin HaBen. He's going to require Pidgin HaBen. Conversely, if let's say she already had children before, but for him now this is his first child that he's having with her, and so as far as Nachla is concerned, he's a Bechor L'Nachla. As far as Peter Rechem is concerned, no Peter Rechem. Okay, good. So those are easy cases that we can construct. The Mishnah is actually going to say them as well. There are going to be other cases as well. Let's see the Mishnah inside for explication of all cases, or I should say better, many cases. Yish Bechor L'Nachla Vein Bechor L'Kohen. First, the headline of the Mishnah. Headlines of the Mishnah. Sometimes you have a Bechor for Nachla, but not a Bechor vis-a-vis Kohen. Pidgin HaBen. Two, you have Bechor L'Kohen Vein Bechor L'Nachla. The other way. You can have a Bechor for a Kohen, Pidgin HaBen, but you don't have Pishnaim. Three, Bechor L'Nachla L'Kohen. You can have a Bechor for both Nachla and Kohen, which, by the way, that's normally they go hand in hand. If this is his first marriage, her first marriage, and they have at first a viable son, so then obviously that in the quote-unquote classic scenario of your firstborn, it'll be both. Four, Yeshena Bechor, Lo Nachla Velo Kohen. And you can have a firstborn, and meanwhile you will strike out both in terms of Nachla and Pidgin HaBen. And again, we're going to be discussing all four of these cases. Headlines of the Mishnah. Now after the headlines, so now the details. Eiz Bechor Lo Nachla Vein Bechor Lo Kohen. So you know the Mishnah's work in order, very organized. So we're going to go first over Bechor L'Nachla and not a Bechor L'Kohen. So, we're going to have numerous scenarios. One, Haba'ach Nefalim, afa pishiyatsa es rosho chai. Let's say that the first baby that the mother produced was a nafal, rachmanus. It was a miscarriage, and even though the head emerged while the baby was still alive, but still, because it emerged when it was born, it was a nafal. So that means that the next one that comes out is in fact not going to be the petarechem. And so therefore there is no pigeon aben. There is, however, going to be a b'chol anachla. Now, why? Why is there going to be a b'chol anachla? Meaning there is something that came out before. Granted, it was a stillborn. Granted, it wasn't viable. But in other words, there was something that came out before. Why is the second one going to be a b'chol anachla? So Rashi over here explains. Rashi says, Abarcha nefalim. You take a look at the Rashi. I'm reading inside. Shiyatza rosh shel nefal chai kigon shayu talmim. Rashi over here, by the way, gives a scenario in which they were twins. Fine. And echad nefal ve'echad kalolo chadashav v'otzi nefal roshu chai ve'echziru b'chaver v'kidma v'yatzazem. So first thing that happened is that nefal stuck out his head and then came back in. Ha'achron b'chol anachla derishon lo yifsidu. Afagav deroshu shahotzi chashav leida ma'alya. Now, the head emerging of the first baby, even though that is halachically called leida, does not detract from the nachla of the second baby that's born. And Rashi goes on to explain why. My time. Degabe nachla ksiv reshiso no, mishalev aviv dava alav, imes yatsa nefal shahotzi rosho rishon, vahave ki, we have in the Rashi, ahave ki yelud, delav bar kayamahu ve'en libo dava alav. An idea which we're being introduced to the first time right now, we're going to see it again and again. For nachla, the Torah describes reshiso no, the first issue of the father. And in that, it means that the father is emotionally attached to the child. Now, if let's say it's a stillborn that comes out, obviously, it's sad, it's tragic. But in terms of Misha Libo Dava Alav, in terms of having some sort of connection between the father and his child, so if it's a stillborn, so the Gemara's assessment is that the father will not have any kind of familiarity with the son, and so therefore it does not represent for him his racious ono, his first issue. His first issue is one that he had some sort of relationship with, even though, by the way, we're talking about infancy, meaning there's not much of a relationship between a father and a son during his infancy. I know you could argue that point, but generally speaking, but still, the idea is that once the baby comes out, kayama, it comes out in a viable state, so then the death of that child would result in Misha Aviv Dava Alav. So, and that would qualify then as racious ono. But if it's an afal emerging, so then it's not considered racious ono, and it does not detract from the next one's b'chol anachla.
How do we translate this first issue as not being zera?
I hear you. This is as far as the Torah Shebaal Peh is concerned. This is the Masorah that's given. I explained it as not as well as it could be explained, but.
Does that something to do with Yaakov having emotional attachment to Yosef?
It could be. But this is the way I presented it is the basic halacha that in order to be a b'chol anachla, there has to be some sort of connection between father and son. Okay, so habarcha nefalim afal pishiyatzas rosh chai. That's scenario number one. Ben teisha shiyatzas rosh meis. Let's say a baby came to full term and its head has emerged. So it now is as far and again, let's in terms of the scenario, let's paint the scene again and again with the help of Rashi. So as we pointed out previously, it's very similar to the previous case. So over here, vis-a-vis b'chol anachla, no, because it came out already in a state of not viable. It came out dead. And as far as petarechem is concerned, it did actually break the womb first. And so therefore the next one is not considered petarechem. Next. Hamapels kimin behema chayev of divrei Rebbe Meir. V'chachamim omrim ashihei bo mitzuras ha'adam. Okay, now what if something comes out of the mother which is extraordinarily mutated, it looks like an animal, has the shape of an animal. The Gemara needed, we discussed this in great detail. So, the Mishnah tells us that, according to Rameyer, that is considered a birth. Therefore, it's Petarechem. Now, it certainly is not Reishis Ono. In other words, obviously, this mutated thing that comes out of the mother, looking like an animal, so the father is not going to have any kind of connection to it, so therefore, it will not affect the next child vis-a-vis Nachla. Number four. And before we move on to number four. But in this scenario, it's only working if I subscribe to Reb Meir Shita, where Reb Meir describes it as, in fact, as a birth. The Chachamim don't even qualify it as a birth until it has Suras Adam, until it looks like a human. So therefore, according to the Chachamim, they would disagree with this. They would say it's not Petarechem because it's simply not a birth. Number four. Hamapel Sandal Oshilia Oshpir Meruka. If, let's say, the mother gives birth to either something which is totally flat, or a shilya, or a sac, or a placenta, or a spear, or a sac, but nevertheless, though, we're not clear exactly where the fetus is in all these scenarios. All these scenarios, there's enough evidence to suggest there is a fetus, i.e. where the fetus is, so perhaps dissolved in the placenta. But there was a fetus over there, and therefore it's considered a birth. So Petarechem, we have. Bechol Anachla, we don't have. Good, another scenario. Number five. Hayot mechutach, haba acherim, haba achareihem, b'chol anachla ve'im b'chol akoin. So let's say the baby comes out, rachmanas, the baby comes out in pieces. So anything that comes out of it afterwards is going to be b'chol anachla, because again, the father did not have a connection with this, and so therefore this does not qualify as a b'chor. The next one will be a b'chor vis-a-vis nachla. However, ain b'chor l'koin. But again, now this the first one that come out, albeit in pieces, nevertheless is considered Petarechem. Number six, Misha lo hayulo banim v'nasa isha shebachar yalda. Shebachar. Let's say a man never had children, and he married a woman who already had children. So obviously, the first child that comes out, b'chol anachla. Yalda oda shivcha v'nishtachrera. Let's say that he impregnated her when she was a shivcha, and then she was released, i.e., she becomes now a converted Jew. So oda uvedes kochav v'nizgaira. Let's say she was not Jewish and she was impregnated, and now she converts. So mishabas Yisrael yalada, and now as a Jew she's giving birth. B'chol anachla ve'im b'chol akoin. So here you'll be a b'chor l'nachla, meaning this is now considered a b'chor vis-a-vis the father, and that now this is his first issue, and he obviously has a relationship with the child. However, ain b'chor l'kohen, but is not considered a b'chor l'kohen, not considered, one second, not considered a petarechem. Not considered a petarechem, why not? Meaning the birth occurred after conversion. So shouldn't it be considered petarechem? So as we're going to see in just a moment, so the petarechem is going to demand that during conception she was Jewish. Why? We will discuss that later on. Rabbi Yosef Aglili Omer b'chor l'nachla ulekohen shenemar petarechem b'Yisrael ad sheyiftu rechem miYisrael. So Rabbi Yosef Aglili is of the opinion that if the conception occurred before she was Jewish and the birth occurred after she converted, in both the case of the shivcha and the regular giyores, so Rabbi Yosef is of the opinion that this child is a b'chor two times over, both for Nachla and for Petarechem. Okay. And the Gemara later on will discuss this machlokas in greater detail. Okay. And that ends round one of the Mishnah. So far in round one of the Mishnah, we have now gone over the scenarios in which we have a Bechor, vis-a-vis Nachla, but we don't have a Bechor vis-a-vis Pidgin HaBen. And now we're going to go over number two. A Bechor is first Pidgin HaBen is concerned, but not for Nachla. Number scenarios the Mishnah constructs. Number one. The man already has sons from other marriages. And now he's marrying this woman for her first time. So now, it's obviously not going to be the firstborn vis-a-vis Nachla, but it will be a Peter Rechem. It's her first, and therefore, Pidgin HaBen is demanded. And number two, Nizgaira Me'uberes. Nishtachra Me'uberes. V'yalda. She converted while being pregnant. She was freed while she was pregnant, and she has given birth. So here, so over here, there will be a there will be a Petarechem, but there will not be a Bechor Lenachala. Right. And Rashi goes on to explain that the reason why there's no Bechor Lenachala is because that who impregnated her at the time was also not Jewish. And so therefore, since at the time of conception he was not Jewish, so therefore he's not considered the father vis-a-vis this child. Obviously, biologically father, but from a halachic standpoint, not considered the father. So therefore, there will be a petarechem requirement, but not a nachla. There will not be a nachla, b'chol nachla. Number three, he ulevia, he v'isha shekvar yalda. So let's say she's a Kohen, she's a Bas Kohen or a Bas Levi, or she's a woman who's already given birth. Number four. V'chein, mishalo shasa la'achar ba'ala shlosha chadashim, v'niseis v'yalda, v'einu yodea im ben tish la'rishon im ben shiva la'achron, b'chol la'kohen v'ena b'chol la'nachla. And the last case of the Mishnah goes over the classic scenario. Classic because it comes up time and again throughout Shas. And that is, let's say a woman has a divorce. Now at the Gerushin, she's given very clear instructions. It happens at every Gerushin. Instructions are, you can get married again, but you must wait 3 months. The concern is that right before Gerushin, she was with her husband. She's pregnant. And so therefore, if she gets married any time before 3 months from now, so what could happen is that she will be impregnated by her new husband, and she will have a baby within 6 months from now, and we simply will not know who the father is. And back in the day, obviously, they didn't have any kind of paternity test, and so you don't know who the father is, and that's a terrible situation to be in. However, if let's say the woman does not wait the requisite 3 months, so 2 months after the divorce, gets married again. 6 months later, she has a baby. So there are two candidates in terms of who the father is. So all this was we could put under the category of shouldn't have happened, but it did. So vis-a-vis Peter Rechem, so obviously it's a Peter Rechem. It's her first baby. Vis-a-vis Nachala, so now this child cannot go to either father and say, hey, I'm your firstborn. Because simply put, he doesn't know who the father is. And ham motzi mechaver ala varaya. And now you're demanding from the estate two times more because you think you're the firstborn, right? Okay, good. Okay.
In the second category of the first one, it says if a man has children and married a woman who never had gave birth. So why the Rashid is not coming up here? Because this man who has had children may not have an emotional attachment to them.
Emotional attachment, by the way, I know. I know. I speak about emotional attachment, which obviously is the guideline. But the assumption is that the halacha is that the first viable child that he had, he by definition halacha looks at it as if there is an emotional connection, even though I understand. Right. In other words, there's also something called life, and you know, and
it all goes to what the definition of Rashid is.
No. I'll accuse you a little bit of overthinking it. In other words, his first viable child is considered his Bechor Lenachla, because it's something where he's connected to. And again, I understand you can quibble in terms of what the definition of emotional attachment is, but that's the basic idea. Amr Shmuel.
Right.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. Amr Shmuel. We start with the Gemara in Mem Vav Amud Beis and the discussion in the Gemara in a Rosh Potim and a Falam. So, as far as the head emerging, let's say you have an eight-month-old where the head has emerged. The head has emerged alive, and then it goes back in again, and then the brother comes out. So, and then the first one, Rachmanis, is not viable. Now, the first one's not viable because it was 8 months when it emerged. It is in halacha referred to as a nafal. So, ein rosh hanafal potro, which means that the head of a nafal is not enough vis-a-vis a birth. Now, we all know, and we've said it so many times, that in terms of the definition of birth, the emergence of the head is considered birth, right? The halacha says this in so many different ways, in so many different formulations, but it always results in the same thing. What Shmuel is now providing is a chiddush, and that is only true if the baby that's emerging is a viable baby. But if it's not a viable baby, so then Shmuel says that the definition of birth now changes, in that it's no longer going to be just the head coming out, but you need more than just the head. Now, how much more than just the head? So presumably Rove, and the majority of the baby emerging. my taima, and so he gives the svara. It's a chiddush, and he uses the pasuk to support it. Granted, he's taking the pasuk way out of context, but it's a way to support his position. So when you have nishmas ruachayim, the living ruachayim in his nostrils, so that is when it's considered rosh. It's considered that the head is significant. Idach lo chashav reishe. Otherwise, it's not considered significant. Tanan, the Gemara says, okay, it's a chiddush of Shmuel's part. He doesn't have any mishnah supporting his position, nor is there any actual pasuk supporting his position. But the Gemara says our mishnah doesn't support his position. If anything, our mishnah goes against his position. Why? Because our mishnah taught us, "Abba achar nefalim shiyatsa rosho chai ubenti shiyatsa rosho meis katani miya rosho." So our mishnah here is describing the nephil being born, and the mishnah is clearly describing it as a birth. So my rosho rubo. So Shmuel will say, "Yeah, you know, the mishnah when it said the word rosho, it meant rove." That's a really difficult. That's a difficult pshat in the mishnah. But that's the Gemara is defending Shmuel. The listne rubo. If that's what the mishnah means, then that's what the mishnah should say. To which the Gemara's response is, "Bedinu di bai lele misne ruba." Yeah, that's really what the Mishnah wanted to say, but I did the kabai le misne sefer ben tisha shiatsa rosho mace. Time of the rosho mace ha rosho chai haba achara b'chol anachla nami lo have. It's only because in the complementary case in the Mishnah had to use the word rosho. Mm-hmm. So for symmetry purposes, so therefore in the ratio as well, we use the word rosho, but quite frankly, the Mishnah would have, the better term would have been rove, but you know the Mishnah sometimes favors symmetry over giving us the more absolute and the more prescribed term that's used. Fine. So we can kind of do away with the Mishnah and say that Mishnah, when it says the word rosho, really means rubo, but for symmetry purposes has rosho. So Tana, Resha, Nami Rosho. Umay kamash malan dekevin demapik le-resha haveleida. Oh, wait one second. So you're telling me that the Mishnah over here is introducing us to the idea that the head coming out is considered birth. Really? Tanina. The Gemara says, I don't understand. This already was taught in a Mishnah. The Mishnah in Chulin already taught us this regarding animals. The Gemara says, okay, but the Mishnah in Chulin is not enough because the Mishnah in Chulin was talking about animals. And I can make a very simple distinction between animals and humans regarding birth and the definition of birth. When it comes to animals, animals don't have a prosdor. Now, a prosdor can either be described just simply as a vaginal canal, or a prosdor could also be described in terms of when an animal is giving birth, there's no legs kind of hiding the birth. Right? The birth is very evident and clear when it comes to a woman giving birth. So in addition to the canal, there's also the legs as well. So the nature of birth regarding humans and animals are different. On top of that, also another point to consider is that by humans, so the head is considered birth because the head is the face, and the face is obviously very significant when it comes to a human, less so by animals. So the Mishnah in Chulin is talking about animals, so you want to argue that the Mishnah in Chulin is not necessarily teach us anything. The birth of the head of an animal is considered birth, but that doesn't mean people. So Hanami Tanina, the Gemara says, okay, but we have a Mishnah Nida. Yatsa Kedarko, Mishiyatsa Rav Rosho, Veza Rav Rosho, Kishmishitetse Padachto. The Mishnah Nida tells us that the head emerging is considered a birth. So if our Mishnah here in Becharos is just coming to teach us that the head emerging of a viable baby is considered birth, I don't need that information. By animals, I have the Mishnah Chulin. By humans, I have the Mishnah Nida. So now, you're telling me that our Mishnah over here is tiptoeing around the issue because it wants to teach us this point? We know this point. Tiyufta d'shmul tiyufta. So the Gemara concludes and the Gemara says, you're right. Shmuel's position is knocked down, meaning we don't really have a way of defending Shmuel. Our Mishnah clearly is of the opinion that, it clearly states that the head emerging even of a nephil is in fact considered a birth.
It's a rare tiyufta for Shmuel.
He got knocked down. Today we finished the seventh parak of the Masechta. We went over various momim when it comes to Kohanim. We finished up the list, opened up this morning the eighth parak of the Masechta, talked about a Bechor l'Nachlan and a Bechor for Pidgin HaBen. The determinants of either are separate, and so therefore we have many circumstances. We did the Mishnah that went through all of them, where sometimes you can have one and not the other.